ladies and gentlemen of all ages, boys and girls. Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Angry Meat Production. We appreciate you coming in and letting us be a part of your lives, week in and week out. We hope to do our best to present you with something that your eardrums delight in. Whether you're looking at us on YouTube or Rumble, or listening to us on Spotify, Google, or Anchor, or any of the other podcast services that we are currently on or trying to get on, we thank you. And if you don't mind, at the end of every episode, stop by, leave us a comment, leave us a like. If it asks for 5 stars, we'll take 5 stars, even if you don't like us. 5 stars are what it's all about. With that being said, we hope you enjoy our attempt to make our advocation our vocation. Ladies and gentlemen, let the games begin.
We here at Angry Meat Production want to thank our sponsor, Mobile Notary Mindy. She's certified with the National Notary Association. She's also bonded and E&O insured. She offers a wide range of services, including wills, powers of attorney, medical documents, healthcare proxies, living wills, certification of trust, assignment of personal property, HIPAA waivers, advanced healthcare directives, and 99 verification. You can find her on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram at Mobile Notary Mindy. You can also visit her webpage at TexasMobileNotaryMindy.com. That's TXMobileNotaryMindy.com. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
Welcome, Angry Faithful. Yes, we have Steve Fisher on the show again. And this time, and this is mostly my fault, I keep on forgetting to ask you and about it, because it was the first reason why I had you on the show in the first place. And we finally, after three episodes, this is going to be our third episode. You had a very interesting Scoutmasters. If you've not read the title of the video, the BTK killer was my Scoutmaster. And it's pretty weird that you learn how to tie knots from an expert knot tier.
Yeah, he did teach a main square knot for sure.
Yeah. I was reading up a lot of stuff. He used to,
it's pretty.
You get to a point when you're like, oh, wait a minute, we're only 55 minutes in the show, and we were already going to talk about horrible, horrible stuff that he used to do with just rope in general. Basically, he masturbated with the ropes, like tied to his legs. I don't know if it was tied to his groin, but it said he masturbated while tied. So I was like, does that mean? I literally was like, does that mean that he masturbated with the rope? God.
Definitely had some interesting deviant behavior for sure, yeah, to say the least.
Have you ever seen pictures of him in his women's clothing?
Yeah, I remember I did a deep dive a few years ago, just going over the cases and stuff, just because I was curious about everything. And looked at the, absolutely, it was crazy. So basically, I had no idea who this guy was, BTK that is, right? Until I was already an adult. Like, I was already in the military, and I was actually home and visiting family, and it was the summer. This was like in 2004, I think. And so we're all hanging out watching TV, and because he's on every local channel, this is there in Wichita, Kansas. And so, like, he's on every channel because they were playing all the court proceeding and stuff, because he was basically just pleading guilty to everything. And that was when he gave a very descriptive testimony and was just had like a robot, just kept talking with no remorse at all. And so I remember thinking, like, who the hell is this guy? And he was all over the news back home. And then it made national news and then international news when he got caught. And so I didn't even know, me and my friends growing up, we didn't even know who this guy was, like I said. So because this is stuff, his crimes were back in the 70s and then into the 80s and then possibly into the 90s. But There's some like
he had a cooling off period.
Yeah, definitely he did. And to answer your question, absolutely, I definitely went down some rabbit holes and just was looking at all the different cases. Don't have it like I haven't read any books about it recently, so don't quote me on anything. But I can kind of just go over basically how I like figured this out. And really, so I grew up in Park City, Kansas, and so it was like a small town north of Wichita, and a lot of these communities around Wichita usually centered around the aviation industry. So that's typically what a lot of these smaller communities are around Wichita. And so I grew up there I was there for 8 years. So I moved away when I was 8, but while growing up, I was in Cub Scouts there. And so during like Cub Scouts is for there in Park City, and it was Troop 492. And that I sent you that picture of the Cub Scout uniform. I had to, my wife and I were cleaning through everything because we moved recently. And so found that, and I was like, oh, I got to take a picture of this. Just because it's one of those weird things where, you know, if you tell people like, oh yeah, that guy was my scoutmaster, it's like, okay, you're a psychopath. Like, that's a weird thing to say. But and then the other thing too is like, not only was he a scoutmaster, but he was like the president of the congregation for his church, which we went to a different church nearby. We didn't go to his church. We went to one in the town called, just a town over called Keechai. He president of the congregation, scoutmaster, and then he was the animal control officer for Park City. And I think we might have talked about that a little bit, maybe in text message back and forth.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit because we were talking about how he got your dog.
Yeah. So this is how I was 8 when we moved from Park City. So I kind of remember bits and pieces, right? You don't really remember a lot around that age. And so we moved away. But my older brother, so this is now fast forward. I'm now, you know, this is when BTK got arrested and everything is, the court proceedings. Yeah. So this is around 2005. My older brother's like, hey, you know, he was the animal control officer for Park City, right? And I was like, okay. And he's like, you remember what happened to Killer, right? And I just, as a little kid, I just remember Killer was our dog, right? So yeah. I just remember as a little kid, Killer got out one day, and you know, when you're a little kid, you don't ask questions. It's like, hey, where's Killer? He's not here anymore. Why not? Oh, he got out and the animal control officer shot him. Like, you know, like, so I just grew up. That was all I knew, like growing up until now. Fast forward, it's 2004, 2005. I'm in my mid-20s. My older brother's telling me, he's like, showing these bullet points, right? Like, hey, he was an animal control officer. This is where, you know, showing me on the court testimony where he's talking about it. Plus the media is having a heyday. So they're going into his background and talking about like everything from, he used to work for an alarm company. So he knew how to disarm a lot of alarms and telephone systems and stuff. So like really scary. Like I said, this is like 2004, 2005. My brother tells me that. And then I remember I have this safe just with old pictures from when I was a little kid. Like, and one of them was myself and Killer. We went to the vet clinic there in Park City, and they used to take pictures whenever of the visitors of the dog. And then like, usually if a kid was there, and then they would put the Polaroid on the wall. And then after we moved from Park City, we had a family member that saw that up. They saw my picture and I think they just acquired it without asking. And then, so they just took it off the wall and took it. And then it just sat in my, you know, in the closet for a really long time until my brother said that. And I started looking through everything and I found it randomly one day. And I think I sent you that picture too, but that was myself and Killer. Yeah. So that was at the Park City vet clinic or whatever it's probably called. Chisholm Trail, I think is what it called then. I don't know what it is now. But yeah, so that was just like a weird connection there. And, so yeah, he killed our dog. And, like I said, I was 7, 8 years old at the time, barely remember it, have no idea. And then as far as the Cub Scout stuff, like the church we went to, where we had our scouting meetings was the church where he was the president of the, where, you know, whatever. I can't forget the name right now. I'd have to look it up. But I was a lot younger. So I was like 7 or 8. So I was in Cub Scouts and he was like a Boy Scout leader. So, usually around 3rd or 4th grade is, I think, when you make that, maybe 5th grade, I think it's called Weebelows, where you make that transition from Cub Scouts to Boy Scouts or whatever. And, so like I said, no idea who he was. I don't remember him. It's not like he, you know, was like knew me my name or anything like that. I mean, I could lie and tell people he did and make a really cool story or a really bad B movie, you know, but, No, I don't, you know, it'd be really awesome to say that. No, I wouldn't even say awesome. It'd be more interesting. I guess awesome. There's no really good
stories where the guy kills his dog and goes after the person. Yeah. I mean,
exactly. Right. Well, what's that movie everybody loves? John Wick.
You know who that story's about? Technically. No. Marcus Luttrell.
Is it really?
Yeah. Marcus Luttrell lives here in Texas.
Yeah.
He was on his ranch. He had a dog named Daisy. Daisy was basically an acronym for the people that he lost on Operation Red Wing. And
I vaguely remember that. Okay. Yeah.
You can listen to the scan of him talking while he's chasing after these people. He took his weapon, he chased it after these people, and it wasn't like John Wick where he like
right
killed everybody, but he ended up like tracking these people down because it was just a bunch of stupid youngsters going around. They were going around everywhere and they were just shooting pets. Jeez. And he tracked them down and chased after them and finally got them. But yeah, technically the story was a small story. People started reading it and that's what it developed to John Wick.
Oh man, that's wild. Yeah, I didn't know that about the Luttrell connection. I do remember that Daisy acronym now that you say that. It's been a long time since I've thought about that story, man.
I just recently one of those things I just recently heard on another podcast he was on.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see here. So let's go forward. So, the other thing, connection too. So my dad, during the 80s, he worked at 911. Like it is a 911 dispatcher. And this is a story that was told to me a long time ago. So if it's not like right on, I apologize. But from what I remember, from what he told me, he took a 911 call, like from the person that reported, and I won't use the name of the victim or anything, but whoever found one of the victims on the side of the road, they called 911. And then my dad was the one who answered the call. And then so fast forward to, so that was in the 80s, right? And then so fast forward to like 2004 or 5. And had Dennis Rader pled not guilty, everybody who from the 911 dispatchers to the detectives to anybody like pertaining to the case would have been subpoenaed for a future trial. However, he pled guilty, and so it didn't go to trial, and you know they didn't have to subpoena everybody, but they sent out these subpoena notices to everybody that was and when I say not involved, not like they're with law enforcement, right? As far as investigations,
they're connected to the case at some point somehow.
Right. Yeah. Not affiliated with the crimes by any means. Yeah. Had it gone to trial, they would have sent like they did get. They were in the process of sending some of these subpoenas out, or at least a notice before an actual subpoena goes out. But
we're getting your ducks in a row just to get everybody.
And so he still has that piece of paper. And so I thought that's pretty cool because that's kind of part of history, you know. But so that's another thing too, is yeah, he took the 911 call, my dad, for one of the victims that was found. So just somebody was hiking or driving down the road and, you know, called it in. And then, so that's another thing too, is like 911 dispatchers, it's not uncommon for them to get subpoenaed for stuff. Like I also was a 911 dispatcher after I got out of the military, for, it was down in that area, not for Wichita though. And, did that for about, 7 years. And definitely was interesting for sure. But yeah, definitely not uncommon for 911 dispatchers to get subpoenaed and then have to go to court and then, you know, go on the stand or whatever. And a lot of the times you don't even end up going, but it is just an interesting, like, weird tidbit of information there. But yeah, so like I said, he wasn't a family friend or anything. We had no idea who he was. And we didn't make those connections. It was just like, oh yeah, we used to live in Park City too. Oh, I used to be in Cub Scouts as well. And then before you know it, you know, it's just like, oh, he was a scout leader there as well. And so I think there's a picture of him online where it says like Troop 492 on the side. And then when I pulled out my Cub Scout shirt, sure enough, it said Troop 492 on the side. I was like, yep, that's the same troop number, represent Park City right there. But like I said before, I don't really remember much of Park City. I was real young. In fact, I don't even really consider Park City my hometown. I moved away after that. But yeah, like I said, it's just one of those weird connections where if you just blatantly like tell somebody that, they're gonna look at you funny. And then unless it's just like one that topic comes up. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, I have a weird connection to that too. But
no. Yeah, it's kind of weird on a lot of stuff that how people get connected to something and they don't. I was like, what was the connection with that one girl with one of the serial killers? I think it was like third or fourth episode that I did. And the whole reason why I started doing an episode on him was because of her, because there was a news article about how she talks to her mom's killer like he's her father. And I'm like, what? And I went over the documentary and everything, and it's so weird. It's like how people's brains work to the point to where they think they're forcing them this self to do something, and they think they're doing like good for society, when it all really it just shows that they're broken and they need to not have a killer talk to them. Or sometimes, you know, that killer could be like, you know, saving grace. You know, it's very, very weird that, that happens, but it still happens at times. Sometimes the best person to give good advice as a person already did bad things.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And then the, with BTK too, like a lot of the connections there as well is like, it makes you wonder when you hear about a lot of these other like prominent killers, like, Ted Kaczynski and his connections with like MK Ultra mind control. And then, so it makes you wonder, cause he was in the military around that time, around 67 to 70 or whatever. So like, that's just the skeptic part of my brain, just wondering like, I wonder if there was some like programming going on there, because that's not normal. And when you look at like a lot of serial killers, a lot of them have connections to, I mean, they always say like, there's like a trifecta of like, what is it? Arson, bedwetting and cruelty to animals. And then, but a lot of them have connections to military.
Yeah. Which is, a lot of them, almost every one of them. Cause that was one thing I was like, piecing together was that every one of them was either honorably discharged or just dishonorably discharged. Most of them dishonorably discharged, and they that's where they found out that they were like fucked up in the head.
Yeah. Well, so that makes you wonder, especially about like placement tests and those intelligence capture test where, you know, they try to get you on like the emotional IQ or the GT scale. Like they try and figure out where you place, because that there are programs out there. And this is, if you read any, like Annie Jacobson, she's an amazing author. She wrote a great book called Surprise Kill Vanish. She's wrote a lot of great books, and she's getting a lot of air right now on a lot of podcasts as well. Lex Fridman was the most recent one that I watched. And then before that, she was on Danny Jones. It used to be called Concrete, with a K. And so when she was talking about that, like, and then there's, I can't think of his name right now, but there's another former intelligence officer who's basically just saying, yeah, they do seek out sociopaths, and they do.
Yeah, you also gotta think of
that's right.
But you gotta think about how they do that job. I mean, right. You have to.
Yeah, you don't want somebody that feels sorry about it and, you know, talking to their potential target like, "Hey, I don't really want to do this."
Yeah, it's
like they need cold blooded people.
Yeah, you have to get a rapport with the person, and basically it's totally opposite of what I am, because if someone like you goes up, is like, "Hey, I know you're a good 4 hours away, but I gotta move this stuff. I don't have that many friends." Yeah, all right, I'll be there in 4 hours. Yeah, I'm not trying to get or anything. It's just how I am. It's like, all right, yeah. I'm doing anything.
Bring my blue tarp.
Yeah, they have to be friends with these people, and when it comes down to it, they have to. It's totally opposite on the movies. They will drop somebody. And like,
oh yeah.
All right, let's go. And they're on the next one, because they don't feel the same way about humanity. It's just a job to them. I mean, they might have, like, you know, good aspects and everything, but most of those people that are like, I don't think you call them spooks. They're case agents, more or less, and they're just talking with those.
A whole nother,
whole nother
animal, dude. Like,
it's a whole different
high IQ. Like, when you just see them sitting there thinking, you know, like watching them on the podcast, you're just like, man, I wonder, like, what all they just thought about right there in that, like, that 2 second gap.
I wonder how many
they're on a whole nother level, you know.
It's one of those things. It's like, how many people do you think they're killing in their heads right now?
Right. Yeah. They're just like looking around like, oh, that's a weapon of opportunity. That's a weapon of opportunity.
And man, working corrections, I pick up on that and it freaks me out. Like, if a person's like, no, it a friend of mine actually had to stop me because this person was being overly nice. And in my head, if a person is being overly nice, that clicks on it that person is probably about to kill me, or he's trying to get into close enough to where he can get he can attack. So I back
up. A psychopath trying to disarm you with a smile.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just something in my head, and after a while, it's nothing, and until it's like, you end up being Scoutmaster with BTK killer, and you just
right. Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, you and corrections, and I have a lot of friends that work in law enforcement back in the day, and I'm sure you're good at reading people and just picking up on, like, oh, this doesn't seem right. So it's just funny, because people can be like that too, and then even environments can be like that. For example, when deployed in Iraq, like whenever we'd go into a village, if there were kids and dogs out and about running around, usually things were fine. But when the kids disappeared and then the dogs disappeared, like, all right, something's about to happen. And it usually would. But so sometimes environments can talk to you too.
I was actually just recently talking to my daughter about it, because as we were talking about how, you know, because she just recently lost her grandfather to cancer, and
sucks.
She was petting the cat, and she just remembered how he would pet the cat like really rough and everything like that. And I'll tell her, it's like, yeah, I hadn't been home for a while. I was traveling when I was in the military, doing all kinds of stuff. And when I got home, I knew my mom had passed only because the yard was dirt. My mom was, she was a green thumb. Everything grew for her. Right. And I was like, oh, she was going through some stuff and nobody paid attention.
That was the first thing I noticed. Right. And so when you, you can pick up on stuff like that. And like, sometimes people are just naturally good at reading other people, right? Especially like children of alcoholics. And what I mean by that is, a child of an alcoholic or like a violent alcoholic, they always would have to know what to say or what not to say, or else, you know, they'd get smacked or, you know. And then even with like, you learn what to say, what not to say, and like facial tics and reactions and stuff, like you get really, like people can get really good at reading other people. So I think a lot of that can be from also environment and picking up on that from early childhood. But, and then some other people are just natural empaths, right? So they can just like look at somebody and they can just tell like, oh man, they're in a lot of pain right now.
Man,
so it is interesting how some people are oblivious and some people are real keyed in to stuff like that. So it is interesting to, you know, everybody's different.
Yeah. My radar goes crazy whenever I went to Washington, D.C. and had to deal with politicians. So.
Oh, man. Yeah. I've never actually been in D.C. I never want to go. I want to go to, I'm going to check out Arlington. I want to check out, there's a couple museums.
Yeah. Well, that was, there's this charity group called Honor Flight. And they take,
I've heard of them.
Yeah. They take veterans, and my dad got onto it, and I specifically, he's like, hey, I need someone to sponsor me to make sure I'm competent, but they just need somebody to go with me. And I was like, I'll treat you like a retard all the time. It's no big deal for me. So we're going to, it's funny. Cause when they're getting off the bus, cause they usually have people from like World War II or, or, and you have to hold on to their belt as they're going down. So if they fall, you can scare them.
Makes sense.
Well, my dad can walk pretty good, decent. I don't say he's the best walker, but I was like, holding him, was like, come on, dad, it's okay. Yeah. Just basically treat him like me as a kid.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Man. Yeah.
It's just funny.
And then, I'm sure he loved that too.
we talk about it all the time. It's fun times for everybody.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Man, that's just how it is. Like, they take care of us and then we take care of them, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes we have to take care.
And then, what's the other thing? Oh, yeah. So, DC. There's a couple museums I want to check out there, but.
You know what I found out when I was going through I know this is totally off subject, and people are like, we need to talk back about the BTK killer. We'll get back to you here in a second. We haven't talked to each other in a while, so we'd like to catch up. Did you know John Williams was in the Air Force?
John Williams.
Oh, if you're a nerd, you know who John Williams is. He wrote Jaws theme. He wrote the Star Wars. Indiana
composer.
Jones. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I didn't know he was in the Air Force band. That's where
didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Did he do like the JFK theme, like the soundtrack and like a whole bunch of like,
I don't know. I think he
did a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. He did.
That's initially what I was thinking. I thought you were thinking of that. Never mind. But yeah. Yeah. I know who you're talking about. Long story short. So I try to say.
Yeah.
Air Force, huh? Yeah. So that's funny. Like I was either when I was 18, so I was a senior in high school, 9/11.
He did
I was either gonna go Air Force. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just verifying that he did do the track for JFK.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I know that I've heard his name and his work before for sure. Interesting. Yeah, that's Air Force, huh? But he's not a serial killer.
No.
No. Allegedly. No, I'm just kidding. He's not.
Not like Garth Brooks.
Yeah. So that's so crazy. Is that still like a huge thing?
Tom Segura is still riding that fucking horse.
All right. Oh, man.
He just recently, because he was like, happy birthday, Garth Brooks. And we know what you did.
That'd be great if they were friends, you know? Like if,
Garth Brooks hates them.
That'd be awesome if they were, they were in cahoots and this was just a.
Because when. That would be funny. That would be a good, I forget who it is. Who first did it? Who did Jim Carrey play on A Man in the Moon? It was a comedian.
Kaufman, Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, Andy Kaufman. God, mm-hmm. I keep on forgetting what his name was. But Andy Kaufman and Larry the King Lawler, little spat. For the longest time, I thought that was real. And then that movie came out, and then I was like, oh, that was fake. No, childhood trauma.
Good times. Or was it fake? We'll never know.
Yeah. But yeah, BTK killer.
Yeah, BTK. Anyway. Yeah. So Todd, a mean square knot. No, that would be crazy. Can you imagine getting your merit badge and knot tying from the guy, the serial killer known for binding, torturing, and killing someone? Like the B and BTK, like, and that guy gives you a merit badge.
No, even worse. Someone comes up to you and it's like, man, your knot's messed up. They're just trying to be mean. And he's like, where did you learn how to tie your knots? The BTK killer.
Yeah.
Okay, this is where this conversation stops, sir. I am totally apologizing. Did he teach you anything
else? It is a good way. Yeah, it is a good way to end a conversation. Another one is like, if my wife and I are in public, I'll just look at her and point and just say, that's my social worker. Works every time. It'll get you out of any conversation you don't want to be in. It's great.
It's almost as bad as what I did. Oh, man, I did this last night. I went to go to the store because luckily we have a 24-hour grocery store, which we don't have anymore. After the whole COVID-19 pandemic.
Scandemic, yeah.
Yeah, the scandemic. There's no 24-hour grocery stores anymore.
Yeah.
Walmart used to be 24 hours. All kinds of places used to be. Now there's no 24 hours. So we got one 24-hour grocery store because we got a lot of factories around and a lot of people work nights. Well, this lady dropped her cookie dough and she's like looking at me. I was like, here, let me help you out. Here, lift up your fourth chin so you just snug that in right there. I walked off.
Nice.
So I'm trying to pick up karma books, so hopefully I can like punch a special needs kid or rob a bank, you know, either or.
Yeah, either or. Yeah, hopefully the latter. You might get more money out of that.
Yeah.
So BTK, right? Let's see here. I'm just trying to find some other random stuff. There's probably like actual people that.
Yeah, I went over the
BTK experts
in. When I went over the case, it's just how, I mean, he hated women. There's speculation that he might have did this against men and children, but most of them were women and the age was different. I think he was really a woman hater.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's been a while and they didn't have like any. It's one of those things is once you like look back in the back of the crevice of your mind and everything, and you look at it and you're like, yeah, he really didn't like women all too much because he would always belittle them. He would always, he was horrible to women. And it was to the point where if you remember from back then, you're like, oh, makes sense now.
Well, we always wondered too. So, so like my mom, she actually, she passed away from a brain aneurysm when she was 36. So we moved away from Park City and we moved to like another town that was kind of nearby, but we often were like, man, like our dog that got out, you know, we just wonder like, was he up to something? Like, was he maybe trying to, you know, try and make it to where he could gain access easier or take out any type of alert mechanism to get access? You know, so these are the things like we thought about like later on down the road. We're like, that's crazy. Like, what if there could have been more victims from that? So, cause it's just, I was real little and I just remember, I'd have to talk to my older brother again about it just to get his perspective. But yeah, our dog definitely was shot from Dennis Rader, you know, who was the animal control officer. So
there is a lot of instances that was what happened, that he used his stuff in animal control that got him access.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so that's the thing, like that's like a con artist tactic, right? Like a confidence trick, and you just exude so much confidence, and typically you do that by portraying yourself as a person of authority, right? So he probably had like a vest on, or like, and he worked for ADT security for a long time. He worked for a bunch of different, and for the city, you know. So yeah, I mean, he could definitely just blend in, and people are obviously going to open their door to a dude like that. Oh yeah, here's the other thing too, he worked for the United States Census Bureau. And for the 1990 census. So, I mean, that's somebody that's definitely blending in with his surroundings. And so it makes you wonder, like, if he's scoping out potential targets when you're doing that too, right? I mean, that seems like that would be a perfect reconnaissance ploy. Because you're doing something while doing another thing, and that's being a census worker, and you're getting reconnaissance on like all these places when you're doing that. So, and as far as when he started reaching out in 2004 or whatever, again, they started Wichita Police Department. They started getting packages in December of 2004. And, it looks like the package was found in Wichita's Murdoch Park. It had a driver's license of one of the previous victims, Nancy Fox. And that was noted as stolen from the crime scene. So immediately, obviously, whoever had that package was connected to the crime scene, obviously the killer. And then so that's where it went. And so there was a floppy disk. And this is where this is kind of where he started to get caught. And that's when he started to, in his letters to police, he was asking them if he put it on a floppy disk, if it could be traced or not. And then... So yeah, it was like one of those 1.44 megabyte Memorex floppy disks. And so they were able to pull the metadata on that. And they saw that the last file on there contained the words Christ Lutheran Church. And it was modified by somebody named Dennis. And then so they just did an internet Google search and then saw that there was a Dennis Rader was the president of the church council. And then so they just drove by his house. And then from one of the previous packages that were dropped off, Home Depot, I think it was, or they had a security camera of a black Jeep Cherokee. And then so when they drove by his house after doing that internet search, they saw a black Jeep Cherokee, of course. And then so that was, and I'm just reading verbatim here, it was strong circumstantial evidence against him, but they needed more direct evidence. And then that's when some more DNA evidence from other family members contributed into finding him. So his daughter actually was a student at Kansas State University. And so they were able to get a warrant and get a portion of her DNA from a previous pap smear. And then they were able to make a familial match between that testing and previous DNA that was on at crime scenes. So then that's where they're able to seal the deal and go in for the arrest. And when they pulled him over, when they got him, he was driving near his home. And the officer asked, "Mr. Rader, do you know why you're going downtown?" And Rader replied, "Oh, I have suspicions. Why?"
Yeah.
So that's like the initial arrest and everything. And then so we all know about the court proceedings, at least if you Google that. But people may not know recently is even recently in the past year, there was somebody that was writing him in prison. I don't know if it was like a fan or just some rando just writing him or whatever. And BTK or Dennis Rader, should just call him Dennis Rader, opened up to this guy that, oh, the police didn't find all of the evidence. There's still some buried in my old backyard, which is that his house was leveled. And then so it's just an empty lot. If you look at the old address, like you could do a Google search of Dennis Rader, previous address. And then if you get on Google Street View, you'll see it's an empty plot of land. And then so he was basically saying that there was workers that built this sidewalk that goes all the way to the east side of that plot of land. And where that end of the sidewalk is where his shed used to be. And that's where he had buried some of this stuff. And they went out there. It was in the past year or two. I'd have to find an article. But they went out there and dug it up. Sure enough, they found some extra evidence. Let me scroll down here and see if it's they added it to here. No. But so, yeah, that was definitely pretty wild that there was still evidence that was out there. And that's the other thing, too, is Kansas enacted the death penalty in 1994. So if he were to plead guilty to anything post 1994 on, he would be eligible for the death penalty. So I think that's why if he did do anything after 1994, we probably won't know about it. Like I said, because Kansas enacted that death penalty in 94. But before 94, they didn't have that. So that's the other thing. Hello?
Okay. Yeah, I'm still here. I just got to do some editing on that. My internet's been shoddy today, so.
Oh, I'm glad it wasn't. Okay, I'm glad I didn't hit the wrong button.
Yeah. No, you froze. I was like, damn it.
Yeah. Do you remember where? Is it still recording right now?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're still going. Okay. So I can just I forgot where did it cut off at?
Don't remember because I was pissed off.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so
we were talking about the death penalty, how any cases were going after that.
Yes. Yeah, so Kansas reinstated the death penalty in 1994. So if he were to plead guilty to anything, to any crimes after that point, 1994 on, he would have been eligible for the death penalty. So if there are more victims that are out there, we probably won't know about them. And like I said, that's just speculation as far as stuff I'm reading online. Which
why didn't they kill it? Okay. They ignited it in 1994 for the death penalty. And this is not for the case, but he was caught in 2005. And his trial was in 2005, 2006. Why didn't they enact the death penalty on him for that period? I mean, he pleaded guilty on that.
Well, 40 states struck down death penalty laws in 1972, and Kansas was one of them. So between 1972 and 1994, there was no death penalty in Kansas. So you could, if you killed somebody, you didn't get the death penalty. So the theory is if there are more victims post 1994, he wouldn't give that information up because he would be eligible for said death penalty. But I don't think Kansas has actually put anybody to death because the Carr brothers, they're notorious for Wichita Massacre in the year 2000. It was like in December. And because I remember I was a high school student and I was working retail in Wichita at that time. And there was like a bunch of killings that happened throughout, I forget how many weeks it was maybe, but the whole entire town again was on edge. So it was one of those weird things where like everybody was on edge when BTK was before he got arrested. And then everybody was on edge when the car broke. Like, they didn't know who was doing these massacres. But it ended up being these two guys named the Carr brothers, Reginald and I forget the other guy's name. But they're both, all three of them are doing life at El Dorado Correctional Facility in El Dorado, Kansas. And so, yeah, so that's the answer. I hope that answers your question. So just basically between 72 and 94, if you committed murder, you wouldn't be put to death in Kansas. And then so after 94, they reenacted it, at least in Kansas. And by the way, I'm not a legal expert. I have no law degree. I'm just a dude reading stuff. That's at least that angle from there.
Yeah. It was Jonathan Carr and Reginald Carr.
Yep. That would be an interesting.
I'm looking at it right now so I can do that. I'll probably do it next week.
Yeah, but that would be
That still just baffles me that because he did it in this time frame, he doesn't get the death penalty, but he was prosecuted. Mm-hmm. After the fact that they do prosecute for the death penalty, that is
right.
Weirdest. Right.
So I think
loophole.
Because you're not convicting them based off of the time of prosecution. You're convicting them based off the time of the offense occurred. And so I think that plays into why. That is, they didn't go after it. Plus, you got to imagine they probably made a deal with them. They're like, hey, just
tell us all this
tell
stuff.
Us what you did. Yeah. And so when you pull that up on YouTube and he's there in the court testimony, you know, in that suit and just read, you know, his goatee or whatever, and he's just reading everything like he's just reading a book and just talking about this stuff in detail, like crazy stuff. And
he's scary.
And so, yeah, for sure. Like that guy's on another level of, yeah, it makes you really wonder what happened with early childhood traumas, or man, was he like a victim of some crazy programming? Have you ever heard of the Osiris complex or like Dr. Colin Ross?
I haven't heard of that, but hold on real quick. And we'll get into that because I'm actually interested in that. What a lot of things is, I mean, look at Roseanne and Sam Kinison. I mean, they didn't go out and kill him, but it was head trauma. I mean, you get a being just right, and it crosses some wires, and maybe something dropped on his head when he was younger and caused that.
Right.
All speculations. I mean, he had a good relationship with his family somewhat. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's the thing is like, Roseanne exactly. So the head trauma. And then they're like significantly a different person afterwards. And so she got into comedy at 40, if I remember right, Roseanne, out of Denver.
It was pretty,
I think it was out of the Denver area. And so super interesting story. She's got some wild stories for sure.
What's the project?
So Osiris Complex is like when you've, it's like compartmentalized personality disorder, usually caused by severe childhood trauma or imprinting. So if you have severe trauma that occurs at a certain point in your life, it's typically during early childhood stages, you can have what's called like imprinting where it occurs. So you can actually compartmentalize and create somebody with multiple personalities. And so this is where like the accountant, that assassin movie comes into play, right? As an example. So, you know, tax accountant by day, secret killer by night, right? So it's not like they're a psychopathic killer walking around all the time. You know,
because I was reading that, and that makes sense with like the DC killers, DC snipers.
John Lee Malbo, I think.
Yeah.
Malbo, something like that. Yeah, I have to look at that case again. It's been a while.
He was trained by his uncle. That was SF, Security, Special Forces. And basically trained him how to stalk, and it wasn't like, oh, we're going to, you know, stalk to hunt and everything. They were training him to stalk as a a predator for humans. Like they would like, what's the
post up in the trunk, right? They're like, have a shooting.
Not that initially.
I don't know very much, a lot about it. Yeah. So
being a pervert, they were training him how to be a better pervert, I guess. And how to like look into, women's windows and everything and not be seen.
Oh, his uncle was?
Yeah. Okay. And then it went into where his the initial snap with him from looking at the case and from what he said was he wasn't able to see his daughter. His ex-wife was trying to keep his daughter away from him with good reason, and then just escalated from that.
But, damn. Okay. Yeah, I remember that. Because when that was going on, because I remember that was like 2002. Because yeah. I was in boot camp, and then we actually graduated boot camp. So when you're in boot camp, you're completely isolated from
news
and media, and even music and all that stuff.
You're not.
TVs
or anything, or
the only thing is, especially if you're a San Diego boot camp, all you hear is just airplanes the whole time, and then so that's basically it, and getting yelled at. But so I remember we graduated like at the end of October, and then that was what was all over the news, and then but interesting. Okay, yeah, I'm pulling it up too. I need to do a deep dive on this. I haven't yet.
I remember
the name. That is interesting.
He ended up like getting the cohort through like religious stance, and the guy ended up being imprinted on him as a type of father figure. Basically kidnapped the kid too, if memory serves me good.
Yeah, probably filling a vacuum, and yeah, like you said, playing a father figure. Crazy. Yeah, I need to look into that. Huh. Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of weird ones that are like that too. Even I know this is about BTK, but I'm gonna just talk about it. Have you ever heard of Jolly West?
Jolly West, no.
Jolly West. So yeah, look up Jolly West. He was like the a CIA chemist, and he's the one that gave like this elephant a ton of acid, lysergic acid, and Lewis Jolly and West. And so that guy was involved with the MK Ultra project, and he was out of like Oklahoma or something like that, if I remember right. Let me go down here. Yeah, University of Oklahoma. And so he gave he killed this elephant. Like, not funny, killed this elephant with LSD, and which is insane. Like, that's crazy. But here's the thing. He had connections to, and by he, I mean Jolly West. He went into like Jack Rubenstein, the shooter of the alleged killer of JFK, Lee Harvey Oswald. Right. So Jolly West went into Jack Ruby's jail cell. And then all of a sudden, when he came out, Jack Ruby was having a psychotic break, talking about people's faces melting.
Yeah.
And then within a year, died of cancer. And then there were connections with like Patty Hearst. But that's the other thing too. Jolly West had connections with Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
Which is another weird one too. So yeah, that's definitely interesting.
The only reason
it went on a side tangent there.
It sounded familiar only because Time Suck did an episode on hallucinogenics.
Yeah, Time Suck's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. but yeah, I just, it's so strange how MK, because the book Chaos?
Yeah.
All about the MK Ultra? Dude. It's so sad is how that book became into existence. That's a 20 year deep dive.
Yeah. So Tom O'Neill, he was neighbors with a comedian, right? Which one was it?
Oh, fuck.
Metzger? No, not Metzger.
I watched it this weekend and I just forgot.
damn it.
Right. Yeah, he was supposed to do a piece on Charles Manson. And it was just supposed to go in why he killed blah blah blah. And then it ended up him writing a book because he ended up finding about MK Ultra, and it took him 20 years to get it out of there in evidence and writing the book. And the book is technically not even finished because he found more evidence on this stuff. He had to give it to his publisher.
It's wild when you start going in and studying, especially if you study like Coin Intel Pro, which was a program. Now that's an FBI program, but even domestically, the CIA, they had some interesting programs that were going on, and that, you know, they say they're not supposed to operate domestically, but that's like laughable. But these different types of programs that were out there, like MK Ultra. They said they just got rid of it right after the church hearings. I think it was. They're like, oh yeah, we got rid of it. Like, all right, wink.
Really?
Right. Then it's like, okay, and then all these like behavior modification drugs come out for, you know, ADHD after that, and it's, you start looking into Ritalin and Adderall, and it's like, oh, this modifies behavior. Interesting. So looking at that comedian, I can't find it right now, of course. But it was a comedian that was neighbors with Tom or with O'Neill. I always get his first name wrong. And it's a great book. It's really interesting. I hope he has a follow-up book to it. I think he might. That could have been a dream. But yeah, hopefully he has a follow-up to that, because there is so much that's still coming out about the 60s and how just counterculture itself was huge, like organized. Just
trying to get the
intelligence operation.
Well, not even that.
It's to pacify the anti-war movement.
Really. Yeah, that's all it really is. And you like look back and you're like, fucking really? This is the reason why?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like,
yeah.
Just, they're just idiots. I'm surprised we don't have something like that now. Well, we kind of do nowadays. And it's not because like anti-war movement or anything. It's just anti-Republican. It's political now. And it's heavily political. Yeah. And I mean, look at all the stuff. I mean, yes, I'm going to vote for the guy. Yes, I like his policy. Do I like the man? Never met him, so I can't really tell you if I met Trump.
Yeah.
Or anything, you know, nice about Trump. I like his policies. The economy was good. So he was doing decent.
Have you ever wrote yourself in for president?
No. No, I
really. I'll vote for you if you vote for yourself.
Yeah.
Let's see if we could get you president.
Oh, I was talking about that today. I'm like, I would be horrible because I would just be like, listen, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but nuke them. We're just going.
That's the secret to life, right? Is nobody knows what's going on, really. Like, everybody just pretends they know what's going on. Like, this is, I'll just bring up some notes right here. It's like, you know how people, and this is kind of just me being silly here, but you know how people are actually, you know how they tell you the definition of insanity is doing the same thing daily and expecting a different result. And then my take on that is I think actual insanity is living in a universe where people repeatedly tell you a pseudo definition of insanity and everybody claps and nods in agreement with that person stating that. And it's just like, if you actually Google or look up the definition of the word insanity, it doesn't say that at all. That's just like a little,
it's basically
side tangent of mine.
It's basically how I feel the definition of insanity is. You're totally wrong. I'm like, I've only met it. What, this is what's really sad. Internet life and real life is totally different. I have talked to people that have that internet life, and that's where they go with. And then when you confront them in real life, it's like you are so aggressive and they're so fearful. I took the guy to, he's a good friend of mine. He just says stupid stuff at times.
Yeah.
And so I took him to the range and everything. And And he's like, I'm not really going to be into guns, but you enjoyed yourself. It's like, yeah, I enjoyed myself. It was fun hanging out with you. I was like, that's how life is. You can do stuff with a person that's not really into the spectrum of what you do, but they still enjoy themselves because we're hanging out, we're doing fun stuff. And that's what a lot of people can't understand.
Well, I think a lot of, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was done.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I think a lot of people that they can get, if they're not around guns, right? I grew up around guns. I grew up going to gun shows in the 90s and 80s and stuff, like in the Midwest, totally immersed in the gun culture. And so I was familiar with it, got to shoot automatic weapons even before I was double digits, right? And so it was just comfortable with those. And also family heavily was in law enforcement as well. So I had a lot of people that were around guns, either for profession or for, you know, teaching safety, hunter safety stuff. Anyway, so I think a lot of people, they just don't have that the knowledge of it. And so if you fear something you don't know, and then typically if that fear compounds, that'll turn into anger. And so I think a lot of people, they just need to be taught how to basically, you know, use a firearm, but not make it in a way to where they feel like it's they're intimidated by like some macho alpha type that's might be, you know, put them down in some way or what. I think a lot of people have a lot of ill-conceived perceptions of operators and, you know, rifle operators. And so there's a lot of unknowns. And so when you have a lot of unknowns, people assume and, you know.
Well, yeah, that was the whole thing that kind of freaked him out when we went out to the range and everything, because of my, I wouldn't say mindset, but my inability to, you know, think through a problem at times. Sometimes I'm sporadic. People are like, you're allowed to carry a gun. I'm like, listen, there's me acting crazy and everything. And then there's me being responsible with a tool. You know, when I'm working, I don't, and I'm hammering or drilling and everything, I'm focused. But when I'm hanging out with friends, I'm a totally different person. And when we went out to the range, I told him, I was like, hey, listen, you're new at this and everything like that. We're going to go over to this. He was surprised of all the stuff I was doing. I was like, hey, we're going to go over safety, do this, 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 don't do this, do this. And when he was shooting, I literally told him, and I do this with people that in military should have enacted this, but you have a lot of people. So you can't do like each person that's shooting, do this. Put your arm, when you're like teaching someone, you put your hand on their back. The back muscles operate everything. Mm-hmm. So you can feel like different parts of a body and how they, if they're freaking, you can tell really fast with your hand on a person's back, if they're freaking out, what kind of movement they're doing, if they need to be cooled down and whatnot. And I held my hand on his back. And throughout the whole process, I would stop and was like, hey, buddy, go ahead, put the fire down, put everything in safe mode and uncock it and everything. Just come back from the range and take a breather. He's like, why? Dude, you're freaking me the fuck out. You're jittery. Stop. You have a breath. And he. And after that process, he's like, you know what? You are totally different at a range than you are in real life. Your confidence level. I mean, even my daughter's like, you have crazy, stupid confidence to where you do stuff that you shouldn't be doing. I was like, yeah, but it's just that factor of trying to get a person knowingly to calm down on a stressful situation. I mean, using firearms is a stressful situation because you have to learn how to shoot with the noise that's coming off of it, the being punched really hard depending on what round you use. Yeah. I've seen a 22 millimeter rifle. And that I'll send you the link. It's freaking beautiful.
Yeah.
With a handheld. But when you study stuff like that, you get to know the person a little bit more in depth, and you create a bond with them.
Right.
Because they feel more confident, and you got them past that threshold. And that's what human interaction is. I mean, getting past certain thresholds and everything of other people's life. And it's like me and you. Okay. We've only had contact through book length comments that you have given me. And, and finally we ended up doing the podcast together, and we go back and forth every once in a while about, you know, conspiracy stuff and theories that we have on certain things. And we just become friends, and we would find each other. It's like, oh dude, I finally get to meet you. I might tackle you. It might be coming. Dude. It's just
awesome. I'll be ready. I'll be ready, man.
I never for it.
Hell yeah. But, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Oh, I was gonna say
with your buddy, sometimes, and I'm sure you've heard this a million times, but sometimes people just, their brain will just shut down if they're not comfortable with the situation. And so, you know, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. I'm sure you've heard that a million times. So a lot of times, even like in the military, I can't speak for all branches, but we would do what's called snap-ins. And that's where you're just dry firing and just practicing form, you know, essentially practicing in the prone, the sitting, the standing. And you don't even have magazines or rounds around at all. And so you're just working on form. And maybe you'll have magazines around to practice reload drills. And then after about a week of that, then you would get them to the firing range and actually get live ammo involved. But it may just be having to break it down Barney style sometimes, because especially when it comes to weapons, a lot of people, like, we think about things differently, especially if you're around weapons a lot. But like I said, people just... there's been a lot of programming, you know, where people will just immediately, they hear all these negative things about guns, or they hear, like, people actually blame the NRA for shootings, which is insane. Like, those are just lost people that are just useful idiots, right? They just don't know what's going on with geopolitics or how the real world works. They're useful idiots. They're loud, and they can be manipulated easily. It's easy to manipulate people like that. And that's what a lot of those groups that are out there with those brand new protest signs that are all like perfectly made. And, you know, it's obviously like, you know, a front, but, yeah, so it's interesting when you have people that just don't, maybe they're not used to being around guns, like I said before, with all that negative pressure. You may just have to break it down Barney style, and just obviously you want to be safe and you want to make sure they know the rules and it's not like fun and games. You definitely want to have that safety aspect on the range and go over all the rules and maybe go over them twice. And, you know, but, and just kind of explain, you know, the environment of a range and what's going on. Like, why is he doing this? Like, why, you know, when, so it just may just be a lot of unknowns. It's like, the whole break it down Barney style thing. I think that helps, but. And then,
yeah, in the Air Force, for my job, I had to do a little bit of drive for it, but it was all basically like flipping pancakes and eggs. I mean, we didn't get the eggs and pancakes until like later on. So, they had to see that you're proficient enough to flip and you weren't going to, you know, flip out.
Yeah.
Flipping stuff.
Yeah, it's a good vetting.
Yeah.
Good vetting. Yeah.
My experience was nowhere near like most people's experience in the military, especially people that are like infantry and everything. It's like, yeah, I had something like that and I had to do this. And dude, just shut the fuck up. Okay. I got that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like when I was in from 2002 to 2006, which is a fucking crazy time to be in. Cause they got, that was a 4-year period and they got 3 deployments out of us, I should say. So our unit, like we got three deployments. It was 7 month rotations. So you're there for 7 months, come back, train the new guys, go back to Iraq for 7 months, come back. Anyway. I got at it for 4 years. Like, I wasn't a career guy. Like, I never had to report into a second command, you know, with a hash mark on my sleeve or anything like that. Like, I got out after four. So, when you get out, like, I just assumed, oh, that's what the military is like. And then you start talking to all these people from like the 90s and 80s. And then, like, there was the Gulf War, you know, that's excluding Gulf War. But a lot of times, like, when I talked to my cousin, like, he was in during a lot of, peacetime operations. So, and then when you start, before you know it, you're talking to people and it's like, oh man, okay, maybe I was in some shit. and if sure enough, like, we were, one of the firefights we were in 2006 was the third largest firefight since Hue City in Vietnam. The second was Fallujah. And then this one, the one we were in, was in Karma, which is just outside of Fallujah. And that was in 2006, and Karma's a hotbed. It was the most violent city in Iraq between 2005 and 2007, hands down. And that's where I got hit by my roadside bombs. But after talking to back to topic, when you start talking to people, and it's like, oh man, it's just pretty interesting to see everybody's background. The other thing too is, as an infantry marine, I can talk to an infantry army person, and like, we could both be in the same area, be talking about the same equipment, but everybody uses different acronyms for everything. So I have no idea, like, sometimes what people are talking about, but we could both be at the same time. It's just funny how it's like that. Just army and Marines always have different names for same shit.
Yeah. Well, you still have the same names for some stuff like the donkey dick and slave cables.
That's right.
I was trying to figure out what the hell they were talking about. I'm like, I didn't have to worry about, you know, vehicles or anything, because my career failed.
That's part of the fun, though, is watching your reaction to that. Like, what you gonna do?
Yeah.
But think about it now. People can just pull out their phone and text. So I found this out the other day. In the Marine Corps, they don't have company runners anymore. What's a company runner? Company runner is somebody that sits at the company office, usually somebody that got in trouble or they got a DUI or something happened, and they're grounded. And their job is to provide information from the company office to usually the battalion building, or maybe where the platoon commanders have their offices, right? And so they don't even have company runners anymore. Everything's all digital and electronic now, which is insane. So can you imagine, like, I can't even imagine being in a group text message conversation with my squad leader or my fire team leader. Cause on the weekends we would disappear. I mean, put wool blankets over the windows, you know, not answer your door at all at the barracks. Or would just disappear for the whole weekend. We'd go up north or something. But now they can instantly find you.
Yeah.
There's no hiding.
Yes,
that was
one of my things I didn't want to have was a cell phone, because it was that whole thing. It's like, no, I don't want you to get to know me. I don't want you to try to find me. You're gonna track me down. I don't want that. And I was apprehensive of getting a cell phone because of that.
Yeah,
I didn't get it because I didn't get a cell phone until like 2010. That was my first cell phone. Yeah, that's how unprehensive it was.
Good for you. That's amazing. I don't know how you did that. That's awesome. I went through some weird phases. I probably concerned like friends and family of mine, but I went through some weird phases where I was like, I'm not fucking having a cell phone, right? Yeah. And then so I did a flip phone for a while, and that's just really annoying. Do you know how annoying T9 text message conversations are? Like, I'm good at it. I can T9 all day, but I'm a lot better at with the smartphone. And, you know, because it's just like, it was so annoying having to deal with that, especially if you're traveling or have to deal with online banking or, you know, it's just inconvenient, I should say. But there was a while there. I just didn't have a cell phone. And so I had a home phone. Like, I was trying to do the old school thing. And no, I didn't. It was... that didn't last, but about, I don't know. It didn't last long. So, that phase is, long gone. But
you know, yeah, what thing I
quite the journey.
What thing I miss now though?
Uh huh.
You're pissed off a person. What do you, and you're on the phone with them. What did you used to be able to do?
Saying slam, up, slam it, yeah.
Yeah. Now you aggressive push my thumb.
Yeah.
Like
then you now you have a cracked screen.
Yeah.
Now it's getting worse. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does suck. That's funny. So yeah, that's oh, what's the other thing too? I lost it. But 2010. That's insane. That's crazy. Because I had a cell phone. I want to say it was in 2004. Because we had all pay phones. Because when I was in the military, at Camp Pendleton, like everybody would go to the phone center. Or they'd go to where all the pay phones were back when that was a thing. And call home. Or then we'd go to the phone center. And I remember this was even before MySpace was a thing. So it was a weird phase before. Like I think I still had like a Hotmail. Or whatever it was, or AOL. Yeah, it's probably AOL. And but yeah, and then MySpace became a thing, and then Facebook became a thing. And I remember we weren't on Facebook yet because it was just for like .edu email address signs up. So it was just for like like college kids, not us infantry folk. And then they ultimately. Oh, remember Hot or Not?
No,
it was like Hot or Not was basically it would show a picture. And then you would rate them 1 to 10, whether or not they're hot or not.
Yeah.
And so this is like before Facebook was a thing. And man, everybody was just throwing their metadata out there and haven't stopped. But
I mean, that's how they found the Russians in Ukraine that one time. Did you not hear about that?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the guys was playing a violin and filmed himself playing the violin. And not that one?
No. No. Tinder.
Oh.
Ukraine.
Oh, okay.
Fake your profiles and the Russians were giving out their locations. It's like, yeah, I'm over here. You hot chick. Come over here.
That's how they
coordinated their attacks.
that's some signals intelligence and human intelligence at the same time. That's pretty smart. That's definitely is going on. So what do you think about, speaking of like topical topics, but the Moscow terror attack that happened, have you seen anything of that recently, today? Because that broke yesterday.
And I don't think, honestly,
I haven't looked at anything today.
And this is just my opinion. I don't think it's a terrorist attack. I looked at it and I was like, oh, because the last thing I heard was Russia is actually going through a civil war. There's words and everything through certain comedian backgrounds that I have. And Russia is going through a civil war right now. It's not newsworthy yet.
Yeah.
And it all started with the Wagner group, but it's really getting heated over there. Well, it's been heated for the last couple of years, but it's getting a lot worse that the country itself doesn't want to back its own country. And they're actually going through a civil, they're on the precipice of a major civil war. They are doing a civil war technically now. And that's what I think happened in Moscow. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is interesting because ISIS is claiming responsibility, but I mean, they claim responsibility for everything, including like gastrointestinal issues. I'm sure they would if I wrote them a letter. Basically,
profitable thing.
What's that?
Could you imagine that being a profitable thing? It just, you text like ISIS or some shit like that. You're like, hey, can you say that XYZ is the reason why I slept with this girl is because ISIS made me do it?
I wrote a funny joke. I'll tell you about it later. But it basically kind of had to do with I'll just tell it right now. Let me pull it up here. Okay, so I basically, this is just the silliness right here. And I put, like, it's sad that the VA is denying claims that are obviously service-connected, right? So, like, oh, roadside bomb, and you're missing part of your brain? Denied. And so, like, a lot of claims will get denied when that should obviously be approved. And so now veterans are contacting Al-Qaeda directly on Telegram, and they're having to ask them for witness statements of them claiming responsibilities for our injuries so we can finally get these claims approved. I like to imagine that Al-Qaeda's reply letter says something to this effect. Ah, yes, we remember you, imperialist Yankee. You're the one that got away that time, lols. That was Ahmad's first day. You were so lucky. May your luck continue with your VA claim. Respectfully, in death to America, Muhammad. And
that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
I love that. That's basically what I'm talking about. That would be pretty. That would be epic if that was an actual a thing that you had.
Yeah. I wrote that
weird story.
I wrote that randomly in the past week. I was like, so I'm still like trying to work on it, but yeah, I thought it was funny. I probably need some work still, but
yeah. But yeah, you know what? We can go ahead and end this now. I know people are trying to figure out why they came this far.
Yeah, if you're actually a BTK academic or whatever, sorry.
We got it at the first part. We did the first part. And then this is basically us fucking around for the last bit. But
that's probably every episode will be.
Yeah, especially with us and everybody else. But I am David Dickerman. Thank you all. This is Sam Fisher also. And thank you all for listening. Thank you all for watching. And goodbye.